C1G.
Number 3A.
Now, we start with the text of Genesis 1:1 and its exegesis. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, Mrs. Eddy begins to explain that, but perhaps it is interesting to know that in the beginning may not be the right translation from the original. For instance, if you take the Italian translation, then it reads quite different, because in the beginning is a term that in Italian, and therefore in the Latin, can mean two things. So the Italian, for instance, says here, within the principle of all, God created the heaven and the earth. Beginning can be principle. In principio, that's how the Italian version goes, not in the beginning, in principio, in the principle of all, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, Mrs. Eddy didn't know Italian, or did she, I don't know how much Latin she knew and how much she had Latin version, but she always had the spiritual version. And therefore, she would say here the same thing as the Italian version would say, the infinite has no beginning. Can you see how sometimes she would interpret a text that says in the beginning, and she would interpret it and say there is no beginning? Usually one doesn't consider this interpretation when you just say the very opposite. But spiritual interpretation is something different. Scientific interpretation is even more something different. So she could see, either through spiritual sense or that she knew something more about the ancient versions, that actually the starting point of our consciousness is there. We begin to realize that the infinite has no beginning. So this word beginning, she says, is employed to signify the only. In this way, she interprets from a scientific, spiritual standpoint a beginning as being no beginning, but being the only, that which from eternity was. So, we start out with the consciousness, really, that there is only one, the infinite one. Now, if we know the levels of science, we know at once this is the level of science itself, because as we have said, the level of science itself is really that which deals with the infinite one as an infinite whole, the infinite one being only conscious of itself and of nothing else, so that it gives a sense, really, that everything is at the point of the one and that only is infinite. So that's a starting point. Then Mrs. Eddy goes further and says, that is, therefore this only is what? Now she translates it to the level of divine science and says, that is the eternal verity and unity of God and man. See, now she takes in man, she takes in the expression of that God, whereas the beginning you only had the one and the only. Now she translates it to the level of ideas by taking in the divine nature of that infinite one and says, well, reduced really to the level of divine science, we can see that God and man, or God and the creator and creation, is actually a oneness, that they exist at once as coexistence. They are the verity and unity of God and man, including the universe. Again, you get the sense of divine science, namely principle including man and the universe, no more just as on the level of science itself, where we ask what is being itself. And actually, naturally, this would be quite enough for us to see that there is only one being, the infinite one, but the human sense within us is not satisfied with that. The human sense within us says, but what about man? He wants to know something about man. He wants to know something about the universe, not realizing really that there is only one being. And so you can see this translation to other levels are always translation that satisfies somehow the human mind, the questioning of the human mind. Therefore, the human mind asks, what about man? What about the universe? The answer here is, on the level of divine science, well, God includes that universe. So that is the eternal verity and unity of God and man, inclusive the universe. You go further, she translated further down to the level of absolute Christian science, namely to the point where we are asking about the creation, about specific ideas. And so she says, the creative principle, God. You see? Can you see? Now it's suddenly the creative principle. Well, how does that how can that be explained when at the beginning she said there is only the infinite one? Well, if there is only the infinite one and the only, there is no necessity for a creation, for a creative principle, if all everything is the one. So one can see again it tries to satisfy again the human mind, which says, but there is a creation and there is constantly a creation going on, but that's only so from the human standpoint. From God's standpoint, there is no creation because it's the one and only. Or if you, I think you can see that very easily spiritually. So the creative principle, life, truth and love, is God. Now this God that was the only is now a creative God, the creative principle, and therefore she explains what the universe is now. The universe reflects God. So at that point now we get the explanation that the universe is actually nothing per se, but is a reflection of that God, reflects God. There is but one creator and one creation. Can you see? A creator and, whereas the first sentence was, there is only the only. There was not an and. Yes? So, in order to satisfy the human inquiry, she has to explain what creation is and says that creation is not something by itself, it is actually only the reflection of that principle, and so brings it right back again to the infinite one. The universe reflects God, there is but one creator and one creation. Do you see the difference between divine science and absolute Christian science? In divine science, in the sentence before, she says, it is the unity of God and man, including the universe. It was including it. Now, she says, she explains what that universe is, and says, now no more it's included in God. It is a creator and a creation, and that creation is a reflection of what? Of God, of the infinite one. At that point, she translates it even further down to the level of Christian science, namely to that level where we can understand really the mathematical order of creation, as she said it, that creation is stated in mathematical order. Now suddenly we get the order that is within creation, and you see it very nicely perhaps, that she gives a sevenfold statement of that creation. She now shows, she's no more happy just by saying that creation is a reflection. Point final, full stop. But she says, now what is that creation? That creation is an unfolding order. This creation, she says, consists of. So she begins to define that creation as consisting of various things. So consisting of is really indicating the principle of that creation, and it consists of the unfolding of spiritual ideas. She shows now the unfolding of spiritual ideas and their identities. Can you hear? If you put it into spiritual order, you would say it consists of what? What is the spiritual order? The order is that there are ideas, mind, that these ideas are spiritual, spirit, and that these spiritual ideas have identities, soul, and that is of what creation consists of, principle, which are embraced, love embraces, in the infinite mind and are forever, life, reflected. They have a form of truth. So in this one sentence of depicting what creation is, that creation is not just a state of things, but that it is an order of progressive ideas, an order of ideas. She has to explain that order of ideas and says, what is that order of creation? She says, creation consists of ideas. These ideas unfold. As they unfold, they take on identity. And if you have that, you have the constituents of your creative principle. What is the demonstration of that principle? That creation is eternal, life, that it is eternally reflected, it has factuality and true form, and that everything is embraced love in that infinite creative mind. Do you see the order? Well, you better see it. Now, you may say something to me which I have to take into consideration. You could say, but the sentence as it is stated here is not stated verbally in that order that I have given just right now. I have given the order of ideas, unfoldment, identity, being the constituents of the principle, which are eternal and which are always reflected and always embraced in the infinite mind. That's the way I have said it. That's not the textual order of what Mrs. Eddy has said here. She said it constitutes principle of spiritual, spirit, ideas, mind, and their identities, soul, and their identities, which are embraced, love, in the infinite mind, and forever, life, reflected truth. Now, scientific spiritual interpretation of text is not interpreting terms. It needs a spiritual order of thinking and not a grammatical order of stating something. In other words, we must remember that grammar does not fit with spiritual order. Grammar is something quite different. Therefore, grammar cannot convey spiritual order. And that's what Mrs. Eddy has brought out in retrospection and introspection in that very interesting short article where she says that grammar was eclipsed. For her, grammar hadn't any more the same meaning. Syntax is the building of a sentence, just as we have right here now. Syntax was spiritual order and unity. So she has another syntax. In the language of spirit, we only have a spiritual order and not grammatical order. Here you have a wonderful example of this. If you would follow grammatical order and take these ideas the way they come in succession in the text, you would, as we have said, we would get first the idea of principle, then of spirit, then of mind, then of soul, then of love, then of life, and then of truth. That's how grammatical order presents it. But that has nothing to do with spiritual order. And you can see that very easily. And this is what means text interpretation. Text interpretation means not reading a text and then taking every word and then trying to give to that word a meaning. Spiritual scientific text interpretation means to be able to reason according to a category, to reason according to a subject. Now, if you take this very sentence, we just take once and then we leave that for the whole week. We are not going into scientific text interpretation, but this is a terrific good example. We can see that what she is saying is that this creation consists of. Well, the moment you say consists of, you know that consistency must be after that having been stated what the elements of the things are. That's not real good English, wasn't it? Huh? But it's not so easy to express it. If something consists, you say it must consist of. It must consist of something. So we only can have a consistency of when we first have all the ofs, huh? Of what it consists of. Huh? Was that more explanatory? See, but that's spiritual order. You can't say, I start with consisting, and then say what it consists of. You have to first give the elements, and then you can say, this is of what science consists of. Of what kind science consists. So, what is it that consists of? It says there are ideas, mind. These ideas unfold and they gather identity. Then you have the identities and they together make the consistency or the constituents of something. Then they consist. So, consist must come after idea, unfoldment, identity. But you could say, she says, grammatically, it consists of the unfoldment of idea. She puts unfoldment as spirit before idea, which is mind. But can you see that this is not spiritual order, that this is grammatical order? How can we have spiritually first an unfoldment and then unfoldment of what? Unfoldment demands that there is something before which can be unfolded. Wouldn't you say that? Huh? So In spiritual order, you only can say, I first must have an element, like ideas, and then this element can unfold. So again, we must correct grammar. Grammar was eclipsed, and syntax became spiritual order and unity. So the flow, the spiritually logical flow is therefore what she brings out through grammar, that she wants to say there is a creation. This creation is a creation of ideas, but these ideas unfold, and as they unfold, they gather identity, and these are the constituents of creation. What then happens with these constituents? Always when we come to life, truth and love, we have the demonstration of it. And so it says, and they are, it says textually again, which are embraced in the infinite mind and forever reflected. Can we have an embracing before they are forever reflected? Spirit is just not possible. Only when these constituents are eternally reflected, we have an infinite reflection, and only when we have an infinite reflection, we actually can embrace them. Before, we can't embrace them. So embracing must be the very last point or a step in that order. And so we have eternally reflected, and when they are eternally, infinitely reflected, then only they all can be embraced. Is that clear? Spiritually. Well, this is only one, a nice illustration. And naturally, when one is used, see, to think in the system of science, and therefore when one is trained and naturally trained, without any special intellectual effort, is trained to think in the categories, say, of the Word, or of the Christ, or Christianity, or science, or in a level, you read these texts without really having an academic training or making a terrific intellectual struggle and combination and acrobatics. You just hear the spiritual order in it. So, in that way, the text opens up. What have you been doing with that sentence up to now? Just saying, well, it's nice, it consists of the unfoldment of spiritual idea and their identities and so on, and they are eternally reflected in the infinite mind. But the moment we can interpret them through science, not what they mean to us, through a science, namely here through a category, so the category of the seven in the word order, they begin to show us naturally the creative order, that fundamental law of creativity that reigns in the whole universe, because that's creation. She says, this creation consists of. So everything that happens in the universe in the way of creative unfoldment, of creative ability, follows that order of having first the light of ideas, that light of ideas begins to unfold, that it unfolds to the point of becoming definite, that this is the fundamental principle of the law of creativity, with what effect, the moment you come to life, truth and love, you come to the effect, that you see, they bring us something that is eternal, as eternal value, and that it is something that is infinitely applicable, infinitely reflected, therefore can be used in any branch of human experience, can be used for arts, can be used in any science, it can be used in anything we want to do creatively, and they are all embraced in one principle. There is only one law of creativity. That's an answer. This sentence is an answer of highest magnitude for the whole world, because the whole world asks the question, How can we be creative? Is there a law that would tell me which step I have to take in order to have a creative life, in order to be creative? One of the greatest questions. Okay, up to this point. Again, let me run through those four levels. I think it's something that should be ingrained in your consciousness. It's really the standpoint of your life, the standpoint of practice. It's the standpoint from which we go out. It's the highest standpoint of practice. What is it? If anything comes to us in the way of problem or anything, we turn away and say, in the beginning, in principle, there is only the one and only. And alone that relieves us quite a way, says there is nothing besides that. So I start right out and begin to see on the level of science itself, we only have the one and the only. If I translate that to the divine nature, to divine science, I see that that is the eternal verity and unity of God and man, inclusive the universe. So it's the oneness of being. There is nothing outside of it. And I translate it further down to absolute Christian science and see, and this consciousness is a creative consciousness. It's a creative principle. Life, truth, and love. And so the universe reflects that creative principle. Therefore, everything in the universe is a reflection, an individual reflection of this principle. What kind of reflection is it? How does that reflection come about? How is that reflection come into being? Is there a step-by-step order process that I can follow so that that reflection comes into being? And so we come to Christian science level, which explains what that creation is. You see, it doesn't explain anymore the creator, but the way that creation comes into being in mathematical order, and says it comes into being by starting out with ideas, not with your problem, with ideas, sticking to these ideas unfold, something becomes very definite in your consciousness and you see the solution, you have the constituents of your solution. And that solution will be a solution that will be eternal and that has true form, truth, and is always embraced already right from the beginning in the infinite mind, love. As easy as that. Okay?